She had bathed and waked the second time as she warmed herself in her blanket, thinking about things, and when there was light enough, she took her tablet into her lap and opened her Bible beside her on the floor. She wrote, "And I looked, and behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness round about it, and out of the midst thereof, as it were glowing metal, out of the midst of the fire." Well, that could have been a prairie fire in a drought year. She had never seen one, but she had heard stories. "And out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and every one had four faces, and every one of them had four wings." Well, she didn't know what to make of that. A dream somebody had, and he wrote it down, and it ended up in this book. She copied it 10 times, still trying to make her letters smaller and neater. Lila Doll, Lila Doll, Lila Doll. She had 4 letters in each of her names, and he had 4 letters in each of his. She had a silent H in her last name, and he had one in his first. There were graves in Gilead with his name written out on them, and there was no one anywhere alive or dead with her name, since the first one belonged to the sister she never saw of a woman she barely remembered, and the second one was just a mistake. Her name had the likeness of a name. She had the likeness of a woman, with hands but no face at all, since she never let herself see it. She had the likeness of a life, because she was all alone in it. She lived in the likeness of a house, with walls and a roof and a door that kept nothing in and nothing out. And when Doll took her up and swept her away, she had felt a likeness of wings. She thought, "Strange as all this is, there might be something to it." Doll was gone those 4 days, she told Lila finally, to see how the folks at the old place were getting on. The times were so hard by then, she was having trouble keeping the child fed and keeping clothes on her back, and she had the thought that things might be better where her people were, farther east. She'd expected some of the worst of them might have died off. She said, "Somebody should have shot that Hank long since." "Who was Hank?" "Never you mind." Doll had to be careful, so she asked around the neighborhood. That took a while, since folks don't like to talk to outsiders. And she walked past the old place a few times to see for herself. She said, "Seemed about the same. Nothing you could go back to." Lila said, "If things had been better, would you have gone back there too?" And Doll said, "I couldn't. They know I'd taken you in the first place, so if I come back with you, there'd be hell to pay." Doll told her this because Lila wasn't the same to her after what happened while she was gone. She said, "I'd done it because I wasn't finding no way to look after you." If Doan had ever bothered to explain, he'd have said the same thing. They were just figuring out where to leave her, for her own good. Where to tell her, "Stay and wait, and somebody will come along." So after that, she couldn't love Doll like she did all those years. For a while she couldn't. She'd never thought she might be sitting on that stoop again, at night probably, watching Doll sneak off into the woods. One way or another, it comes out the same. Can't trust nobody. They found Doan and the others again. It was evening after supper, and there was a fat, soft, embery fire in the middle of the clearing. Doll picked up the skillet and tossed it into the fire. Flame roared up and embers flew. "How could you do that?" she said. "Leave my child sitting on the steps of some church. I might never have found her. I told you I was coming back." She was yelling at Doan mainly, but there was no one there she didn't glare at. Only Melly glared back. Doan said, "You was gone a while. We sort of gave up on you." "Now why would you do that? I keep my word. Has there ever been a time I didn't in all the years?" Doan said, "Well, Doll, you can hold your grudge or you can come along. If you're going to be around, I don't want to hear another word about this. None of it." Marcel said, "We kept your stuff." "I just bet you did," Doll said, and Doan gave her a look. He said, "We thought about dropping it in the fire, but Marcel wouldn't stand for it. It might have been the best thing." He walked over and picked up Lila's bedroll. That shawl was wrapped around it. He pulled it loose, and he smiled, and he went over and sort of dangled it over the fire, and the flames climbed right up it toward his hand. So that was gone. They stayed with Doan's people, Dahl having no better idea what to do. They never said another word about what had happened. It was just like before, and everything was different. You best keep to yourself, except you never can. Mrs. Graham wanted help with her wash. She was a cheerful woman, friendly. She enjoyed talking. She never seemed to notice that Lila didn't enjoy talking or listening, and that was all right. They'd worked together times enough that Lila knew how she wanted things done, and that seemed to make the day go faster. Mrs. Graham made them a nice lunch of tuna fish sandwiches with chocolate cake for dessert. She had a nice house. There were white curtains in the kitchen with strawberries along the hem, little green stitches to look like seeds. The washing machine was on the back porch. It was a good machine, electric. You didn't even have to crank the wringer. Lila didn't let herself look into the parlor, at the piano and the sofa and the rest, which reminded her a little of St. Louis, except that none of it was so big and fine, and the drapes were open. At the end of the day, she had a $5 bill and a waterproof coat with a hood. Lila said, "The Reverend told you to give me this." And Mrs. Graham said, "Well, he worries about you, dear. He's a good-hearted man." And it was just hanging in the closet, no use to anybody. She smiled shyly, kindly. Lila didn't ask whose closet it had been hanging in, how many women in the church or in Gilead had been asked if they could spare a coat before this one turned up, or how there could be no one else but her who could use it. Maybe no one was as broke as she was, but there were some people who must come pretty close. He should be worrying about them, too. Well, all right, she thought. So all I got to do now is save up for that bus ticket, save up a little traveling money. I can't wait to get out of this town. She folded the coat and put it into her carpet bag, the $5 bill in a pocket, and then she walked up to the cemetery. The roses on the grave were blooming, and the weeds were, too. She said, "Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Ames. I've been staying away too long. I never meant to let this happen." She loved them, the likeness of a woman, and in her arms, the likeness of a child. It was evening when she opened the gate to the preacher's garden. She picked some beans and groped under the plants for some potatoes. There was light from an upstairs window, and no other light in the house. Let him be, all right. That seemed like a decent prayer. Let him stop making me feel so damn broke all the time. That was a good one. Better to tell him that one herself. She could do it right now if she wanted. Maybe she hadn't been as quiet as she thought, because he knew she was there. He opened the front door as she was walking to the gate. He said, "I've written you a note. I thought I might give it to you." "Well, of course I will give it to you. There wouldn't be much point," he laughed. "I hope, well, obviously, I mean, if there is anything in it you find disagreeable, that will be despite my best efforts. To the contrary, if you see..." He handed her an envelope. "Good evening. It's a fine evening." He went back into the house. The envelope wasn't sealed, and when she was out of sight of his house, she opened it just enough to see that there was no money in it, only the note. She had to laugh at a pinch of something like disappointment. She was close now to having enough money to be able to leave. Maybe it was more than enough. A couple of weeks ago, she'd have thought it was. The more you have, the more you want. If he had given her money, there'd have been anger and shame to get her on that bus. She could have stopped thinking about it. One other time, she had been given a note for Dahl from that teacher. Lila read it to her because Dahl said her hands was all wet and soapy. It said that she was a smart girl and would benefit from further schooling, and that the teacher would be happy to do whatever she could to help make this possible. "Lila is an unusually bright child." Dahl said, "Benefit," and Lila told her it meant that it would do her good to stay in school another year. Dahl said, "I already knew you was bright. I could have told you that." That was all she said. It was so easy for Lila to forget that Dahl had broken the law when she carried her away, and had set off a grudge, too, which was a good deal worse. And for a long time she hadn't realized that the life they lived with Doan was one that would make them hard to find, because people like them don't talk to outsiders, and they all know that if somebody is on your trail, you can just slip into a cornfield. Once, Dahl must have thought she saw somebody from the old place. She'd kept Lila with her a whole day in a hayloft, quiet as could be. That was before the corn was high. But to spend almost a year in a town was dangerous if anyone happened to be looking for them. Dahl knew those people, and Lila didn't, so if Dahl thought they might try to catch her for the sheer devilment of it, Lila guessed they really might have tried. But that was nothing the two of them mentioned, even between themselves. She has made remarkable progress. Lila knew that note by heart. No point reading Dahl the parts she wouldn't understand. She was glad that teacher couldn't see her now. What was this old man going to tell her in his note? Don't matter. A letter makes ordinary things seem important. He was wearing a necktie, expecting her maybe, because she'd been at Mrs. Graham's and might be wanting to thank him for the coat. Or maybe he waited for her every evening. She found herself sometimes listening for his steps in the road. People talk themselves into these things, and then nothing comes of it. They don't even want to remember there was a time when it mattered to them. They hate you for mentioning it. Those women in St. Louis, the young ones, there was always somebody they were waiting for or trying to get over, and the older ones would just laugh at them. They'd be laughing at her now. He probably had a meeting at the church, so he was wearing a necktie. You fool, Lila. Whatever it said, it would be kind. And if it wasn't, he'd have found the kindest way to say it. St. Louis. Much better to be there in the shack by herself, in the evening with her potatoes roasting outside. Doan used to push a spud out of the fire with a stick, and they'd toss it one to another until one of them could stand to hold on to it, and then it was his. One of Arthur's boys, always. They'd just go to sleep when it got dark. She should buy some candles, maybe even a kerosene lamp, so she could read and practice her writing if she felt like it. But light did draw bugs, and it was better if no one saw the shack at night. Not that people passing by wouldn't notice her fire, but light made you blind in the dark, and there might be something you really needed to see out there. The evening was peaceful, but she couldn't stop wondering about that letter. She might just light a cigarette. She might strike another match to read the first few words. They were, "Dear Lila, if I may, you asked me once why things happen the way they do." Well, she wasn't really expecting that. "I have felt considerable regret over my failure to respond to your question." She shook out the match. He wasn't asking for his umbrella back anyway. The next morning, she took her tablet and copied as neatly as she could. "You must have thought that it has never occurred to me to wonder about the deeper things religion is really concerned with, the meaning of existence, of human life. You must have thought I say the things I do out of habit and custom, rather than from experience and reflection. I admit there is some truth in this. It is inevitable, I suppose." She wrote it 10 times. Well, what did old Ezekiel say next? "And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like burnished brass." She wrote this 10 times. Salted babies, sparkling calves' feet. Strange as it was, there was something to it. Well, there was the strangeness of it. That old man had no idea. "Let us pray," and they all did pray. "Let us join in hymn number no matter what," and they all sang. Why did they waste candles on daylight? Him standing there, talking about people dead who knows how long, if the stories about them were even true, and most of the people listening or trying to listen. There was no need for any of it. The days came and went on their own without any praying about it. And still, everywhere, meetings and revivals, people seeing the light, finding comfort where there was no comfort, just an old man saying something he'd said so many times he probably didn't hear it himself. It was about the meaning of existence, he said. All right. She knew a little bit about existence. That was pretty well the only thing she knew about, and she had learned the word for it from him. It was like the United States of America. They had to call it something. The evening and the morning, sleeping and waking, hunger and loneliness and weariness, and still wanting more of it. Existence. Why do I bother? He couldn't tell her that either. But he knows. She could see it in him. Why does he want more of it, with his house so empty, his wife and child so long in the ground? The evening and the morning, the singing and the praying, the strangeness of it. You couldn't stop looking. He would walk up the hill to that sad place and find them all covered in roses. If he knew, and if he didn't know, who had made them bloom that way, he would think it was strange and right. There was no need for roses. Marcel chose that name for herself after she heard some women talking in a beauty parlor. When he started turning mean, Doan began calling her Marcel in a way that let you know it wasn't her real name. When he did that, it made her cry sometimes. She pretended, but she always had, and they had always wanted her to. Lila and Melly loved to watch when she opened the little box where she kept her powder and rouge and lip rouge, her eyebrow pencil. She almost never opened it. It was so precious. The stale, sweet smell of it. Sometimes she let them brush out her hair. They did all think she was pretty. They felt a little pleasure and a little envy at the way Doan favored her. He would take her arm to help her through a muddy place in the road. Once, he bought ribbons at a carnival and tied one in her hair and one in a bow around her neck and wound one around her wrist and one around her ankle, kneeling right on the ground to do it and setting her foot on his bent knee. Dahl said, "They're married people." Lila had no particular notion of what the word married meant, except that there was an endless, pleasant joke between them that excluded everybody else and that all the rest of them were welcome to admire. It was that way before times got hard. After that, Doan seemed almost angry at Marcel because there wasn't much he could spare her. Still, he looked for her and he stood beside her, even when he had no words to say. There are the things people need and the things people don't need. That might not be true. Maybe they don't need existence. If you took that away, everything else would go with it. So if you don't need to exist, then there is no reason to think about other things you don't need as if they didn't matter. You don't need somebody standing beside you. You don't, but you do. Take away every pleasure, but you couldn't. Because there can be pleasure in a sip of water, a thought. There was no reason for Doan to tie a ribbon on Marcel's wrist, and that was why she laughed when he did it and loved him for it. Why they all loved them both. There was no reason to let an old man dip his hand in water and touch it to your forehead, as if he loved you the way people do who would touch your face and your hair. You'd have thought those babies were his own. All right, she thought. All right.